This is The Impromptu, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. And now, your hosts for today, Michael Norton and Alex Knight, with special guest, Aline Sims.
So Batman, in the current movies, like the Christian Bale portrayal of Batman, he's really cocky and arrogant. Like, was he like that in previous iterations or in the comic books? Because I haven't read a lot of superhero comic books.
It honestly depends who's writing him. There is a giant chunk of time that I missed in the 90s where I dropped Batman comics. So all I know is just from a few of the different writers I've read over the years, it's changed, especially depending what era that you look at, like, you know, early 80s Batman versus, you know, late 80s Batman is different depending on, you know, if you look at like The Dark Knight Returns, like Frank Miller's like dark and gritty version, where he's like this really angry guy who is willing to hurt people a little bit more than what we've seen in the past. You know, but I think he's always had that slight level of arrogance.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the comic, well, I mean, I haven't read any of the comics, but the Batman I'm familiar with is the Batman animated series, Paul Dini, version. And his arrogance is really just, I'm the most awesome detective ever, and I just know everything about people instantly kind of thing. Like, it's a bit of a Sherlock vibe. Like, he just figures shit out.
And well, that's kind of like the original TV series, too. Like, 1960s. I mean, there's a little bit of that kind of arrogance, I'm so smart, stuff going on in there, too.
Well, I mean, the 60s show was, I don't know, the 60s show was really campy. I mean, Batman, they did portray Batman as this intelligent guy, you know, which, you know, I guess, you know, if you can ignore all the campiness of the show, he was still, like, at the core, this intelligent, like, you know, scientific, this guy with clearly with a, you know, a lot of knowledge in science and criminology and all that sort of stuff, but
for example, all the bat something repellent sprays in his belt.
Shark repellent.
How did he come up with those? By being awesome.
Right. And I know those, the 1960s Batman series is so, so campy, but I love it so much.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best.
Yeah.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Though I have enjoyed Rocksteady's take on it, the Arkham series of games. That's been fun. They've sort of based it on the animated series a bit anyway.
And, well, I mean
it's Kevin Conroy.
Yeah, Kevin Conroy doing the voice, yeah.
It's been a fun ride. I'm really looking forward to the new game that kind of finishes off the trilogy.
The one thing I always find interesting about the psychology of the character, too, is this... they've come back to this one aspect of his personality, no matter who's writing him, but this idea that he believes, and he's had this conversation with Alfred too, where he believes like he literally believes he is the only person capable of doing the job that he does, which is funny because Batman lives in this universe of other superheroes, even though it's not really acknowledged. I mean, in the TV show, like the animated series and stuff like that, it's kind of like self-contained. We only see stuff that's really happening in Gotham City, right? But in the comics, I mean, there is this whole world, this DC universe exists, and Batman, you know, is part of the Justice League. So it's kind of strange that there's this aspect to his personality, like, I'm the only person that can do this job, which is really not true, but he feels very strongly about it. But I mean, it's part of the oath that he made, you know, to his parents at their grave, right? That he would avenge their death by doing something. I mean, at the time he made the oath, he didn't know he was going to become Batman, but he knew he wanted to do something and figure out a way to avenge their death. And clearly he took issue with the criminal system and due process, and clearly that was going to get thrown out the window.
Yeah. I think there's also kind of that element to him where, and this probably ties back into the thinking he's the only one that can do the job. In the animated series and in like Justice League and stuff, he's portrayed as like almost an obsession with making sure that superheroes don't abuse their power.
Oh yeah. That yeah.
They're always in check. Mm-hmm. And that if something mm-hmm. goes wrong, he's the one to stop them or know how to stop them.
Yeah.
So I think it kind of extends to just this general, because I'm this normal person who happens to have the resources and the intelligence to come up with this stuff.
Yeah.
I'm the only one that can make sure that regular people are okay.
Yeah, very, very much. And I've seen with the Justice League too. I haven't read a lot of it. I mean, I've seen some of the cartoons as well. And his whole attitude is very holier than thou. Like, I am the only person that can keep people in check. And he's above, like, I get the impression that he feels he's above everybody, you know, which
is a little bit
kind of shitty. Yeah.
I am the law.
Yeah, the new not Avengers. What am I thinking? The new Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
I read exactly half of the first the first issue, and I got to the point where Green Lantern's like, Green Lantern's got this, and I was like, I literally cannot read this right now. Like, I don't know what DC is doing. I just I stepped away and I never looked back. And I was really excited because I was like, ooh, you know, my first foray into really reading a superhero comic book series, and I just couldn't even get through the first issue.
Haven't read it. I do like, there's a lot of stuff that DC did with the rebooting of everything a couple years ago. A lot of it's not being very good. I do like, I think it's not Detective Comics. See, it's also confusing too because there are so many Batman titles.
Yeah.
And the continuity is all over the place too. Yeah. Like, it was weird when they decided to do the whole rebooting of everything thing. For certain titles, it wasn't really a clean slate. Like, they brought in, and I'm no expert on this, but they brought in Batman's son Damian from previous continuity. But without really any explanation of why he's there, because they're starting at number one again. So why? Like, why aren't we starting on a clean slate? I personally would have loved to just be a complete clean slate, but it wasn't too bad. I do like, I think it's just the, not Detective Comics, but there's the Batman, self-titled Batman, run with Greg Capullo, I think that's how you pronounce his last name, the guy that used to draw for Spawn, I think it's Scott Snyder. The whole first kind of mini series they did with the Court of Owls was awesome. I'm really behind. I have like a huge backlog of like trades that are sitting on my coffee table that I haven't read. Actually the Batwoman series is really, really awesome.
I have a
as well.
Batwoman Elegy, is it?
Oh, yes, that is awesome.
So good.
Yes, it's really, really good. I've not fully caught up because they changed writer, so I'm kind of worried if the writing's going to change dramatically. I hope it doesn't. I love her as a character. I think it's really great. I mean, how many gay characters do we have in the DC universe?
Exactly.
Not that many. Not a lot.
Yeah.
Less than Marvel has, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. So, yeah, maybe I'll pick that up again. Maybe the new Wonder mm-hmm. Woman will be a good place to start. Yeah.
She has pants
she
now.
She has pants?
Isn't that amazing?
No. Her cleavage is, like, not
reasonable.
Exposed. You know, it's It's pretty neat. I don't know. She looks pretty cool. I'm hoping that the writing will align with her look.
Plus those, like, arm blades. Pretty badass.
I'm not sure about those. Like, are they retractable? Is she channeling Wolverine here?
I don't know. Maybe.
I have questions about them.
Yeah, they could be retractable. They look like they fit. They fit underneath the armbands, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's some depth there on the left arm where it looks like it's kind of underneath, so it might retract.
Yeah, it looks like they might retract.
Yeah, and she's all muscly, and I'm excited.
They can't do snicked, but they'll do something, maybe.
Yeah. I'm not sure I like those boots, though. I think the boots look a little silly. Because she's always had, like, really, really high, like, thigh-high red boots, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, I think
with
so.
With the white, so. I think maybe that's just a nod, I guess, to the original design.
Yeah, that, and she's kind of got a little hint of a skirt that,
yeah.
that kind of is
a loincloth.
Like, yeah, a little loincloth that's, I think, kind of a nod to that original costume style, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they've got her...
They got rid of the, well, for the longest time she had the whole Stars and Stripes thing.
Well, they still have that. It's just a little more subdued, I think.
Yeah.
It's definitely subdued.
It's more like kind of a fusion of Themyscira armor and Stars and Stripes. Almost like she mm-hmm. took a custom suit of armor that she has in her house and painted it. Like, she took it to the shop and had
just
it custom.
Just a little bit of modification.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks good. New Superman's weird. It's really weird. I'd have to know how he ends up.
Are they trying to go gritty?
Like, yeah, I don't know. Because it's like...
Make all the things gritty.
He's wearing regular pants... A regular t-shirt with, like, the old Action Comics version of the Superman logo.
Yeah.
What looks like his cape is torn up and is acting as, like, gloves.
His head looks a little tiny in that picture.
Yeah, he's definitely very brawny looking.
His legs are really long, too.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's kind of weird.
And he's wearing, like, hiker boots or something.
Yeah, I don't know. And then I thought one of the things with Superman was, like, originally Superman doesn't kill. Like, there's no or little collateral damage. And this picture shows him, you know, this preview image is like,
mm-hmm.
like a pool of blood at his feet and blood spatter on his shoes. And I'm kind of wondering.
Yeah, he would. Yeah,
oh, I was just going to say, I was kind of wondering, like, what is the insinuation here? Because one of the things I did mm-hmm. like about Superman was kind of that, like, regard for human life.
Yeah, he looks like he's starting to look, wanting to start a fight now.
Well, I mean, Superman wouldn't, I mean, he doesn't go out of his way to kill, but, I mean, let's face it, sometimes there's going to be collateral damage, like... It's hard to avoid people getting killed or seriously hurt when you're having a battle in the middle of Metropolis and buildings are getting destroyed, like in the Man of Steel.
Oh, God, yeah, let's not talk about that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Zod throws, quintessential example. Zod throws a tanker truck full of propane at Kal-El. Leaps out of the way and lets it hit a building.
He could have done something with that.
He could have caught it. He could have taken the full brunt of the explosion to protect the building. But no, he leaps out of the way and lets it hit the building. Could have been people in there, but, you know, Superman.
Well, you know, Superman clearly concerned for, you know, damaging his threads. You know, it takes a long time to make the suit. Doesn't want to get
it's a bespoke Kryptonian original.
Never to be reproduced.
Yeah.
Because, sad, oh God, now I've forgotten his name and I feel terrible. Russell Crowe. Sad Russell Crowe is dead and he can't make more.
Yeah, I hope they tone the... like, I know Superman is going to be in this new Batman. Obviously, I mean, this is a huge deal. The new Batman versus Superman movie, which a lot of people are excited about. But I hope... I would hope that they tone down some of the craziness that happened in
Man of Steel. Yeah, it looks like...
Like, there's going to be epic battles. Like, obviously, no doubt between the two of them, but... I don't know if they can really, considering how many people were upset about some of the stuff that happened in Steel,
and
I don't know if they can get away with that kind of level of destruction with, like, just Superman being so careless or not. Like, Superman has to make an honest effort, right?
Yeah, exactly.
To, like you said, that's a perfect example of someone's hurtling an object that you don't dodge out of the way and let some pedestrian take the hit. Like, that's so out of character. That's not Superman.
Yeah, I mean, he can stop a speeding train from, you know, careening into a ravine or over a cliff or whatever. So why did that happen?
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, I think they're actually going to retcon it a little bit or at least explain it, because the new movie, it looks like Superman gets put on trial.
Mm.
So I think there will be some repercussion there for...
He's going to have a hard time paying that... that destruction, that wanton destruction with his salary he makes at...
The Daily Planet,
The Daily
He's going to be a wage slave at the Daily Planet for the next 5 million years.
his wages are going to be garnished for the next 50 years.
50?
Be longer
than that. There's no way that's long enough.
Billions of dollars.
Exactly. Yeah, trillions. It would be trillions.
Yeah.
The entire city was devastated. Not to mention all the damage in Smallville. Yeah, we're easily talking in the trillions of dollars here. So, at a regular reporter wage,
poor Superman. This is how he learned to not be destructive, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. By being forced to work forever at the Daily Planet. Which miraculously has been rebuilt by the time of the next movie. City was destroyed, but it's all back now.
Helping to rebuild with the, you know, the power of Saul and everything. He was super speeded and aided the construction.
That would be a terrible detail to overlook. If they show Metropolis at all in this new movie, they really should show it with, like,
construction everywhere.
Of this, construction and portions of it still, you know, being rebuilt.
Yeah, I would imagine they're not going to overlook continuity like that.
That would be pretty bad.
Like, Zack Snyder, like, if you look at Watchmen, the guy knows his continuity. Like,
Sure.
Well, in so much that he can perfectly replicate frames of a comic book.
But, sure. Yeah, he's good with the visual design stuff.
Yeah. Story, not so much.
Yeah, we'll see.
But
we'll see. He's not my favorite director, that's for sure. Like, he knows how to do visual stuff, but I'm really concerned about the screenplay.
Yeah, I don't think he's entirely writing it, but then it's like David S. Goyer is involved, and I really don't like that guy.
A lot of people don't like him. He's not... I agree, he's not the greatest. I mean, he wrote the original screenplay for the Chris Nolan Dark Knight movies, but also Chris Nolan and his brother rewrote a lot of those scripts.
And this is the same guy who said, like, a bunch of ridiculously sexist stuff, too.
Oh, yay.
So, yeah, he's a classy guy.
And Zack Snyder, didn't he do Sucker Punch?
Yeah.
Which that stirred up a lot of crap on the internet.
Yeah.
I haven't actually seen it, but from what I read some pretty in-depth reviews about the subject matter, and it seemed kind of messed up. But the thing is, I know people that enjoyed the movie too, and I know women who actually enjoyed the movie.
Well, it's like
part of it, some people are really upset about it, and some people are just
part of it is kind of this female empowerment fantasy, but then that's like the crazy CG bits, and then the rest of it is just this impossibly bleak misogynist nightmare where women who thrown away and lobotomized.
Isn't she supposed so she's supposed to be, this is like the lead up to basically the way that she is just kind of getting through the experience. Is that what the gist of the movie is?
Yeah, and they also come up with an escape plan, and she ends up, oh god, now I'm going to spoil the whole thing.
No, well, don't spoil it. It's okay. But, I should probably go. Probably see it.
It's interesting. It's very interesting. Yeah. A lot of it makes very little sense, but it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. I'm just looking at the cast and the names of the characters, and I'm immediately like, I'm having this visceral reaction that I'm like, I don't want to see that. Baby Doll, Sweet Pea, Rocket, Blondie.
What's with the names? They all sound like stripper names.
Weird. And it's more weird because it's implied that it's nicknames that they give each other. So it's like, wait, what?
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Well, he never was a great story writer.
I remember seeing
the
previews for it.
He's just like, I'm going to make this movie and it's going to have these girls in sailor outfits with samurai swords fighting robots and Nazi zombies. Right. Whatever. Like, that was the entire point of the film, basically. He just kind of made up a story that sort of fit having those things.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if you like cool choreographed action sequences, like, you can probably find all of the dream sequences on YouTube or something. You don't have to watch the rest of the film. Because, the rest of the film is not great.
Yeah, I'm not so sure I want to sit through that thing now.
Yeah, it's just a little bit unsettling.
Speaking of disturbing, did either of you see the Batgirl alternative cover
that's
been circulating? Some people are pretty upset about this.
Honestly, looking at it, I think everybody should be upset about it. It's kind of horrible.
Yeah.
In that it's completely horrible.
Yeah, pretty much.
So there are two reasons why I did not grow up reading comic books and kind of why I still don't really read them. Like, I've read The Walking Dead graphic novels up to, I don't know, probably like 6 months ago. I'm a little behind. But other than that, and like Batwoman Elegy, I haven't really read anything because, well, first of all, I didn't have access. I grew up in a small town. There were literally no comic books for sale where I grew up. But secondly, it just never has felt like a space that's welcoming to me. And, you know, it's I'm not girly, but I identify as a girl and I like some stereotypical girl things and I don't like misogyny, and it's kind of felt like that's where comics have been historically and still are. And, you know, DC especially seems to be problematic and kind of not with the times. And so you see a cover like this, and I'm like, wow, you know, I really, really don't think this is a place for me to get started.
They've been all over the map. Like, you know, I thought they were starting to make some progress with, I mean, obviously, you know, reintroducing Batwoman as a gay woman and whatnot. But then it feels like they take one foot forward and two steps back kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I haven't read this particular article here, but do either of you know, like, what's the deal with the cover? Like, it seems to me it's a nod towards the Killing Joke, for anyone that didn't read it, the Joker ends up, basically crippling, Barbara Gordon, and she ends up in a wheelchair for the rest of her life. And, it's never, I guess it's kind of hinted or perhaps implied that there was some sexual abuse because that happened because the Joker ends up you see the Joker taking photos of her mangled body on the ground. He takes photos of her just for fun. I mean, but it fits the character. Like the Joker is this psychotic, you know, murderous person who will do anything to get Batman.
True, thing, right? But so, usually,
but I don't know what the deal is with this cover. Like, is this is an alternative cover? So, does this have anything to do with the contents inside the issue? And if not, that's an even bigger problem because they just put it there to sell more issues for the wrong reasons, I think.
Yeah.
Because the whole relaunch, the thing is that Batgirl has switched creative teams, right? You had Gail Simone doing it before, and they switched, and it's now Cameron Stewart and Babs Tarr, I think.
And Brendan Fletcher.
So you have a new creative team. Brendan Fletcher, and they redesigned the character, and the art style is the only way I can describe is it looks a little more cartoonish, like in a more simplified, it's a more simplified style. It's just, it's different. And I remember when they made that announcement and they released some previews of the artwork, a lot of people, it was kind of polarizing because diehard fans were like, this is too cartoony and childish looking, but it was only men who were making those comments. But then you had women who had never read the comic who suddenly looked at that and go, oh, this actually seems more appealing to me now. So I don't know what the deal with this is, like if it's related to what's inside that issue.
Yeah, the thing is, I'm not sure that it matters. And like, I see a couple of issues like with the cover and kind of with comics in general. I mean, this cover is highly suggestive, and extremely terrifying. I mean, really, if you really look at it, and so
makes me feel gross when I look at it.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe that's clearly. I think that's the reaction that they were going for, though, because the Joker. So I'll just the flip side of this argument, I guess, is that the Joker, this is very much in character for the Joker. If he had an opportunity to horribly maim someone that Batman is close to, he's going to do it. And he's done it many times in the comic. So I guess the other argument is, how is this different than any other horrible thing that the Joker's ever done? I mean, he killed Jason Todd, the first Robin. So,
well, okay. So for one thing, it's a cover. So immediately, you think about my friend Steve Lubitz, and I know Alex, you're acquainted with him too. He has little girls, and he wants to take them into comic book stores. And he was tweeting about this cover earlier today and talking about, like, can I take my kids into comic book stores? If this cover's going to be there, I'm going to have to explain that to them. Mm. And that's problematic. And I'm not saying that, you know, I think that there's not censorship exactly, but there's like a line you can walk. And I think this is too much for a cover, you know, in something not necessarily adult oriented space. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the comic, I don't think DC has ever pitched this comic as a kid's story. Most of the stuff that in their lineup is they're all adult comics. You know, they deal with adult themes,
dark.
Not necessarily gratuitous, not necessarily just gratuitous violence or nudity, but just in general, very adult themes, right? That maybe a kid wouldn't even really be interested in reading or wouldn't get, depending on how young they are. But a cover like this, I mean, it's clearly meant, I see the marketing angle, like they want people's attention on the cover, but I think something that disturbing should probably, at the very least, they probably could have bagged it. You know, like, you know, certain I remember with the death of Superman, when that whole thing happened, they came out with black bagged versions of Superman. I mean, they can do that with certain comics as well. Yeah. I don't see any reason why they couldn't have just put a special cover so that it kind of censors the front of it. Because the thing is, that wouldn't take away from the contents of the story, right? Like, I mean, if you're a fan of Batgirl or whatever comic and you're subscribed to it, you're gonna read it regardless of what the cover is. So this strikes me as, we want to get the attention of people who don't necessarily read this series on an ongoing
sure
manner. we want to bring people in, so let's just put the most disturbing thing we can possibly put on there to get people's attention. But clearly it's gonna upset certain people.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. If they wanted to bring new people in, this is entirely the wrong way to do it.
I agree.
Well, yeah, it makes me wonder who they're trying to attract, you know? Like,
right,
I look at this and I don't think this is something I would want to read. So who's going to look at this and be like, oh yeah, that looks like it's something that would be really enjoyable for me. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's enough, I guess, women in comics have been mistreated enough by male characters in general, and the comics are generally written by men as well, which doesn't, you know, it just adds to that whole insensitive aspect that, or tone deafness, so to speak, that a lot of writers have. I don't have any issue with extreme violence. I don't have an issue with sexuality, but I think those topics, those themes have to be approached delicately. And there are better ways to handle those things without just sensationalizing it, like in this particular cover. Because it wouldn't be the first time that a publisher has put some kind of controversial subject matter on the cover of a magazine or comic just to get people's attention, but then when you actually start flipping through it, it's like, this has like
nothing
to do with what was on the cover. They just put a pair of boobs or some extremely graphic violent image on the cover because they wanted me to buy it. And I think I'm honestly surprised that more people aren't offended by that, because that's just, to me as a consumer, I feel lied to. I feel mistreated. I feel like you've broken a trust. I think there should be a certain level of trust between the creator and the reader. And oftentimes, you know, unfortunately, a lot of those decisions that are made at DC, for example, I don't know who made the decision, but a lot of times the creative team, the writers, don't have a lot of say in what's going to be on the cover. Like, this could have very well been a decision that was made by a senior editor, for example. So it's not fair to blame the writers, because we're like, we don't know who made the decision as well. Because again, like, these are big, you know, multi-million dollar companies, and oftentimes bigger decisions are not going to be made by, you know, the writer or the artist. Mm-hmm. And you know, unfortunately, the writer, the creative teams do end up getting a lot of flack, because that's the first, you know, they're on the front line. So that's where people on social media are going to go to. They're going to be like, how dare you do this? And it's unfair, but that's just that's the reality that we live in.
Well, but on the other hand, I mean, somebody agreed to do this cover, like, mm-hmm. You know, even if it was someone on an executive or managerial level who was like, we need a cover of, you know, the Joker. I don't even know. Like, I don't want to describe it, you know, but we need this cover. And, you know, they went to somebody, and maybe they went to two or three somebodies. And then they said that somebody was like, sure, I will create that cover for you. And, you know, so there's an element of choice in that. And,
sure.
You know, yeah, these are big companies, and in a way that makes it more disturbing for me, because, you know, it wasn't just one person making a decision. Like,
sure.
there's a process, you know, and there's got to be an approval sure. process and a legal process for everything. And, you know, this got past all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, certainly as an artist, you have a choice, at least. I would imagine if you're commissioned to do something for DC, the thing is, like, you do have a choice as an artist as what things you decide, what projects you decide to take on to, but I don't know who did the cover, but if you're commissioned to do something for DC, I imagine it would be pretty hard to say no to that. maybe it's a money thing. Like, you know, I want the notoriety and I want the paycheck to do this piece of art, you know, and subject matter be damned kind of a thing. And that's certainly a decision that somebody can make. I'm not going to say it's the right decision or not, but that's certainly a decision you can make. I don't have to agree with it. And I think you're right. I mean, it does take more than one person to make this kind of decision. So
the artist is Rafael Albuquerque.
It's, I'm not familiar with
him. Yeah, I'm kind of looking at his stuff right now. It's not, this is actually kind of seems to be a departure from his typical style.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very odd.
I'm gonna make a guess that this has to do with a paycheck. Doing the, because I would imagine you're gonna get paid more for doing a cover on a DC comic.
Yeah,
but I don't know enough about how it works internally.
I don't either.
And it's weird because the current Batgirl run is nothing like this. So it's basically someone went, oh, let's do a variant cover with this thing that's completely unrelated, but because it looks disturbing and people will buy it because it's disturbing, even though the story has nothing to do with it. Yeah, that'll be cool.
This kind of crap happened a lot in the 90s. I thought we were done with it. Like, do you remember in the 90s, it was really common to have, like, both Marvel and DC went crazy with alternative covers. Like, there were comics where you would get, like, you know, you could collect, like, four different covers of the same comic. And they would do, like, hologram versions and, like, bag foiled like fancy cover versions of comics and stuff like that. And then eventually people realized that the stuff that was actually inside, you know, the actual story was garbage. And it was just, it was like a last minute ploy from companies like Marvel because their sales were hurting, in certain periods throughout the 90s. And you know, even with the whole death of Superman thing, which was really crappy, that story is not good at all. And I remember when that they did so many different variant covers. They did like a black bag Death of Superman, like it had like a bloody Superman logo on it. And when you opened it up, it came with like a little black Superman band you could wear around your arm, like as if, you know, for the funeral procession and whatnot.
Wow.
And just all these little gimmicks and stuff like that. And I remember like people were saying that all these variant covers were going to be worth something one day because they're rare. You cannot give that stuff away now. Like, it's worthless.
Well, it's because they made so many of them. And the funny thing is, they're still doing these variant covers. And people are still buying into it. Oh, and here's a good one. This apparently is what Batman's going to look like now.
They're changing Batman?
Yeah, and I have no idea what they're doing. Also, he has a gun.
What?
This can't be Batman.
What?
There's no way this is Batman.
This looks like something out of Miyazaki.
Yeah.
Well, that's Greg Capullo's art for sure. It's got a signature on there. I hope I'm pronouncing that name right. Two L's. It sounds Italian. Capullo? So it's like a soft sound.
Yeah, Capullo? Apparently that is Batman. Here's...
Well, he's wearing, he's must be, I mean, that's not the first time Batman's had
Here's
to wear
Batman, armor. Here's Batman, Superman, issue 21.
Okay, well, he's going to fight Superman. He needs armor for sure. That's
yeah, maybe it's like super kryptonite anti.
What's with the stupid long?
It looks like
ears.
That
bunny.
Dumb.
The site is calling him Bat Bunny.
He could just easily snap those off.
Yeah.
That's just weird.
Maybe the deal is that Superman is on, like, steroids and he's roid raging, and that's why he looks like a bodybuilder who just killed everyone at a bar. And Batman's, like, going into an Iron Man suit to stop him. This is what it looks like, anyway.
Huh.
I have no idea.
I like the original armored costume that he wore. What was it? Is it the... No, it's not the Dark Knight. Is it the Dark Knight Returns where he fights Superman? I can't remember now. I haven't
Yeah. Which is what the Batman versus Superman movie is supposedly going to be based on.
And I remember the... did you see the little teaser that they released at Comic-Con where they actually show a clip of Batman in the armor? And the armor looks exactly like the armor in the comic. Which
yeah. It's not this. Let's put
no,
it
it's
that
not
way.
This. It's he actually had in the original. I'll have to see if I can maybe find an image, but he wears like his helmet looks like an armored version of his standard cowl, and has really short ears.
Yeah,
on it. Nothing
and
ridiculous
like the glowy eyes.
Yeah, exactly. The white glowing eyes.
Yeah, I saw that clip. But yeah, this is just bizarre. It's like, if that's Batman, what does Green... Oh, no. They also showed Flash and Green Arrow, who look mostly okay. Green Arrow was wearing cargo pants, though.
You're talking about the comic?
Yeah, like this whole refresh that they're doing with all these new costumes. Very odd.
Yeah. I can't keep up with that stuff. It just bores me.
Well, and it seems like they refresh costumes very frequently, you know? Like, I remember having this conversation with a friend like 2 years ago. Like, oh, look at what they did with Harley Quinn.
Well,
and I don't know.
Yeah, they did. I mean, with the new 52, all the characters got redesigns. And funny, like, Batman's costume, too, looks different depending on who's drawing it, because everyone's got their own sort of, you know, fanboy idea of what they want Batman's costume to look like, right? Like, if you even look at the, just compare how he looks between Batman and Detective Comics, the armor, like, his suit looks different. Some people like to put rivets in unusual places. but anyways, so, you know, just if we can kind of, like, loop back to it, so this... troubling cover of Batgirl here. Another thing that I know Steve Lubitz made this comment on Twitter recently about how, you know, it's hard to take his daughter to the comic store because of stuff like this. And I feel that's like, that really bums me out when I hear stuff like this, because a comic shop should be like for everybody. There should be something in there for everybody. And I don't mean just Archie or My Little Pony.
Yeah.
We should have... That's embarrassing. Like, we should have, you know, a decent amount of titles that young kids can read. You know, you shouldn't have to, you know, walk into a comic shop and cover your kids' eyes because of something like this, or have to explain something like this. Yeah. It's a little disappointing.
Well, and I think that, you know, DC and Marvel are missing out on an opportunity, right? Because I don't know if you... I don't watch Craig Ferguson, but a couple of years ago, there was this clip of him talking about how advertising and technology combined have kind of created a culture where we revere the young and we kind of ignore the old, which is kind of in opposition to how it was historically, where the older people are, you know, the people who carry the wisdom and you know, have life experience. And instead, we're, like, idolizing young people. But, like, what advertisers realized is that if you get them young, you're going to have them for life. So I don't understand why DC and Marvel aren't creating series specifically for children to get them hooked in now, so that later when they're old enough to read things that are grittier and more adult themed, you know, they can and they'll be ready to. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. It seems like a huge opportunity.
It is a huge opportunity that they're missing, and I don't think the answer is what some of the stuff that they've done, like at least in the animated area, they've done shows where they're basically taking the same characters and oversimplifying the designs of the characters and dumbing down the stories and making them G-rated just so kids can watch them. And I feel like, you know what, guys, like, you can be more creative than that. Like, why don't we just go ahead and create new characters? Like, leave the adult stories and adult superheroes that we currently know for the adults, and why don't we create some new characters that would be appealing to kids and just make all new stories and characters.
Well, and the funny thing is, they even have some series that could work in that manner, like Teen Titans. And yeah. I mean, they've done quite a lot of kids shows off of stuff like that.
Yeah, actually, it's a shame it was canceled, but I really enjoyed, I think it was only up to 2 seasons, the Teen Titans cartoon. Came out a few years ago. That was really solid. Like, the interpersonal relationships between the characters, and you see them that they're, like, really young and inexperienced, and they're making mistakes in the field, and they're trying to prove themselves to all of the, you know, superheroes, that people that they look up to and stuff like that. I thought that was great. We definitely need more of that.
Yeah. It actually lasted for 5 seasons.
5 seasons. Okay, maybe I must be thinking of a different... There was another series that I watched. I thought it was something Teen Titans.
Yeah, so after Teen Titans ended, they did a new series called Teen Titans Go, which lasted for 2 seasons. So the original show ran July 2013 to September 2006. July 2003 to September 2006. Yeah. And then Teen Titans Go is recent. It's April 2013 to now. Season 2.
Actually, neither of those two are the one that I saw. So now I'm not even sure what I watched on Netflix.
Huh.
Let me look it up. Something Teen Titans. Maybe it's very possible I got the name wrong. Probably got the name wrong, because now nothing's coming up. Anyways, it was like...
Was it Young Justice? Maybe?
Young Justice. That's what it was.
That was really good.
Good series. Did you watch it? Yeah. Yeah, it was good. But again, it was good, but a lot of the characters were effectively young versions of the older characters. Like, there was, like, Kid Flash.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so he has, like, the same powers. Aqualad instead of Aquaman.
Talking to dolphins.
Well, hey.
I just think we should have some original.
It's funny, they actually end up playing that for laughs a lot, because one time they changed the definition of what a fish is. And they had Aquaman be able to control a person. Because humans have water in them, therefore fish.
Oh, dear.
So it counts.
That's a stretch.
It is, but yeah. And then one time he was able to summon a blue whale that, like, crushed a guy.
Yeah, I...
Just, like, to show that he's not a pushover, per se.
Yeah, I just, you know, it's not like there's a lack of creative people who can't come up with new characters and new stories that are appropriate for kids. Because, I mean, as much as I love My Little Pony, and I do, like, I sit down and binge watch it with the best of them, you know, it's not the same. And, you know, there's a place for that, but there's also a place for superheroes for kids too. I think it's really sad.
yeah, and it's still so male dominated, right, with the characters that are out, right? So there should be, you know, more female characters for sure.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about, I mean, yesterday in another podcast, we talked about how they have a new female Thor, right? Which is a step in the right direction, but it's moving very slowly.
Well, and it's just like, you know, again, for people who are going to listen to the gym podcast, you'll hear this probably, but, you know, I think that Marvel is, because of Joss Whedon specifically, I think Marvel is doing some great things in at least the movie spaces with diversifying characters and, you know, racially and gender standpoint and all of that.
Yeah.
And then we have DC coming out with t-shirts that are like Future Wife of Superman. And I just,
so
it
lame.
Is so bad.
So bad.
It's like we've reduced a woman to only aspiring to be the wife of a superhero. Like, is this like Mad Men? Like,
apparently.
1960s? Like, what is going on?
Yeah, and that's what I don't, you know, like, you know, I just, and that's part of what, you know, looking at Wonder Woman, you know, this new costume for her, and, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, I can see her muscles, and I can see, you know, she's strong, and she looks determined, and I think we need more of that. I think it's amazing, you know, because, you know, women are amazing, you know, not to detract from guys, but I kind of feel like we've had the short end of the stick for a while, and it's time. It's just time, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think really, yeah. I mean, there's precedent for it where they've done alternate Justice Leagues. They could totally do a Justice League of female superheroes if they wanted to. The only danger there is because it's DC, they'll probably end up calling it something stupid like Justice League Pink. And then it's like all the goodwill immediately is sucked out of the universe.
The nail polish truck is being hijacked.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's just like a severely depowered version of all the main female superheroes and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. You see, I mean, a lot of the problems that, you know, some of the problems that comic books have with the way that characters, like, you know, female characters are portrayed and the way things are marketed to, you know, those kind of problems are prevalent in other areas of society, mm-hmm. like in general. Like, have you guys walked into a Toys R Us?
Oh, don't even give me story.
I saw a crossbow,
Nerf crossbow.
It was like
that's all
pink.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like pink. It's like, see, it's for girls because it's pink. Mm-hmm.
And you know, and they have the dumbest names ever. It's the Nerf Rebel, where Bell is Bell. Yeah. It's really bad. And the weapons have even dumber names. Hold on. Mm-hmm. I'm looking it up. Be afraid. We have the Agent Bow, the Messenger, the Rapid Red, and the Spylight. Oh, actually, this is less terrible. But they're still pink.
Yeah,
pink and
yeah,
it's purple
it's bad
now
on both the boys and girls side as well too, because they still like toy companies are really notorious for this. They really like separating women and women into specific gender roles.
Yeah,
I walk into the boys' toy aisle, and once you get past. You know, once you get past like all the action figures and stuff like that, you'll see stuff like tools, like construction tools, right? Just quote unquote manly men things that, you know, boys should aspire to do. And then you walk over to the girls' aisle and it's like kitchenette sets and like taking care of babies.
Of course.
Well, and like, look at Lego. Have either of you been in a Lego store recently?
Oh, God, yeah, all of those.
They're not. Yeah.
So
they got their own set.
There's only a few of those, too. It's like, oh, here, girls, here's this little corner of Lego models we happened to make for you.
Right. Well, and it's really interesting. So my husband is super into Lego. Like, our house, we have shelves dedicated to Lego, right? And I, you know, I like it too, but, you know, so we watch Lego documentaries from time to time, and there was a recent, like, 30-minute one we found. And they were talking about how they didn't realize until recently that girls were interested in playing with Lego, and that's why they created the Lego Friends sets. And I kind of remember sitting there thinking, do none of you have daughters? Like, none of you working there have daughters. Like, why did it take you so long to realize that girls liked playing with Legos? Like, my early memories of playing with toys are playing with Legos.
Well, and it's stupid because originally all the Lego sets had this little insert with them that was like, whether you're a boy or a girl, imagination is for everybody and just enjoy it. And they've kind of forgotten
it's really stupid,
that.
Especially with Legos. Yeah. There's absolutely no reason why Lego needs to be marketed toward, like, differently.
Right.
For different genders at all. They're just building blocks. Right. Like, doesn't matter.
And why not just throw, you know, I like the new brick colors. I like the purples and the pinks and the turquoise. Throw that in with the regular bricks. Why, you know, I don't get it.
Yeah, you know, and I'm not a parent, but I've heard arguments from, you know, I've had discussions with parents about this too, who have young kids. And, you know, my argument is always like, you know, let your kid decide and see what they would rather play with. But a lot of times, you know, and I've heard this from mothers too, with like, well, yeah, but my kid, I've done that, and my, you know, my kid always gravitates, my daughter will always gravitate towards Barbie, but they're not realizing that they've had an effect on their kids by, you know, but from their own personal experiences about what they grew up with, even though it may not be like, they may not be pushing their children in that direction to play with Barbies, but It's about how your kid is raised, right? Too.
Well,
they're going to learn stuff from you.
Yeah, and there's also, you know, greater societal, you know, pressures too. So this is actually something that Steve Lubitz and I talked about on my podcast about, you know, I had my cathartic rant about Lego there too, and you know, he was talking about that his kids, he will never buy Barbie for his kids, but family members do. And what are they supposed to do? Like, do we tell our family members, you know, oh, I'm sorry, you know, this gift isn't coming into our house? Or, you know, the kids go over to friends' houses to play and their friends have Barbies and then they come back and want them, you know? So it's complicated, and I totally understand that it's complicated, but it's also really frustrating.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, it's problematic. I try to stay somewhat out of these arguments just because I'm not a parent. But yeah, it's interesting how people have seem to be very opinionated about this particular topic. It kind of makes me a bit sad that certain people that raise their kids think that their son or daughter needs to only play with specific toys, and it's sad when, especially when a kid says, I want to play with this specific thing, and the parent won't.
Yeah.
Like, not letting a daughter play with, like, a G.I. Joe, for example, or not letting your son play with Barbie if that's what he wants to play with. Like, you know, and it's really sad when you hear comments like, well, I'm worried about my son turning gay. You know, if he plays with, but like, that has nothing to do with, like, and even so, like, if you can't accept your kid for who they are, then you're a terrible person.
Yeah, you know, I had a,
like, kids will play with whatever they want. Like, it's not going to have some deep psychological impact on them.
And in fact, you might make things worse if you beat them down because of it. I had a conversation with a friend recently, actually, about kind of this, you know, this issue of, availability of toys, and you know, this friend is gender non-binary, so I, you know, and their opinion is that, you know, well, maybe we shouldn't have boys and girls, and I said, well, but if I had a child, how long would I be able to get away with, you know, not revealing its, you know, not telling people what its genitals are, basically, mm-hmm. you know, and they're, you know, not long. Like, that's not a place where our society is. And I said, but there are things I can do. Like, if I have a boy, you know, I'll buy them dresses to go in the dress-up chest, or, you know, Barbies if they want Barbies, or if it's a girl, for sure provide a little construction set. And just, like, make it abundantly clear that, you know, you are who you are, and I'm going to accept that no matter what. But society at large is not in a place where that's happening, where a lot of people aren't prepared for that to happen.
Yeah. And a lot of kids are getting discouraged and put down, and yeah, bad stuff ends up happening, unfortunately, in some cases. It's really sad.
And
yeah.
It's sad, and I don't see it changing anytime soon, because unfortunately companies are driven by money. Yep. And they're gonna continue to do things that will, at least in their eyes, whatever, you know, when they crunch the numbers or, you know, run statistics and demographics and focus groups and whatnot, and if they feel something will make them more money, that's the direction that they're going to take. And I don't think anything's going to change unless, like, a mass amount of people start seriously complaining and vote with their wallets, choose not to buy those products. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, but I don't see anything changing unless people just stop buying those products.
Yeah. Well, and I think we also live in a time, too, where, you know, I don't know, think there's an upheaval right now, you know, and, mm-hmm. you know, for,
sure.
for like, the LGBTQ community, and there's, like, we're in this big transition period. And on the one hand, I'm like, oh, yes, we're in the middle of this transition. On the other hand, I'm like, but it's literally going to take the rest of my life for us to get through this, if not longer.
Yeah. I got into an interesting debate today, actually, with my girlfriend, because we were talking about the prevalence of booth babes at Comic Cons and similar types of mm-hmm. events. And it's still a problem, not just at Comic Cons, but in general, you know, using, you know, just hiring models to showcase products for the sake of, you know, just having a pair of boobs there.
NVIDIA.
And even though it's irrelevant. Yeah, exactly. I have a problem with it, but I was actually a little surprised that that she didn't see it as an issue. I should probably actually bring her on the show, because I don't really want to get into an argument about it. Yeah, I'm not going to speak for her, but she didn't agree with it. She didn't really... she said that she felt, I guess, you know, like, sexuality for her, like, she's very open-minded, and, you know, she doesn't see it as an issue. She's like, I'm so numb to all of this stuff anyways that... But to me, I see that as a problem, because, like, if you're so numb to it, isn't that problematic? If you're so numb to marketing, you know, you feel desensitized by it. That's a problem, because marketing, like, even if we think that advertising doesn't affect us, it does. The reality is it does on some level, right?
Well, and as a woman who works in the tech industry, things like that make me feel like I'm not welcome. And
right.
This isn't universal, obviously. You know, there are women who feel differently, but, mm-hmm. you know, I don't feel, I feel like that's catering to guys. Or
sure, well, of course
right.
it is.
Right, and to me, it's like, the way I feel and the way I see the world is not taken into account. You know, we're going to have scantily clad women. And I don't have an issue with scantily clad women, but I do have an issue with scantily clad women like in the workplace, oddly enough. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree with you. I think there is a right, I think there is an appropriate time and place to do those kind of things. Like, you know, I think at an event like PAX or Comic-Con, or if you're advertising a product, it's clearly done in a gratuitous manner. Like, we just want your eyeballs on this product, and clearly it's going after, you know, straight men. I see that as a problem. But there's a time and place to, like, you know, I went to the, every year with my girlfriend, I go to the Vancouver Taboo sex show, right? And neither of us have an issue with porn. But porn is not pretending to be something that it's not. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, when you go to that place, everything is, like, you know, it's all consensual, and everybody knows what they're getting into. Mm-hmm. It's not just a group of guys that decided to hire some half-naked women because they want to advertise their game console, mm-hmm. whatever. AMD has actually been really bad with their ads for the Radeon graphics cards. Have you seen these?
I have.
No, I can't say that I have.
Either of you? Okay, well, I walked by a local store here, and they had a poster on the wall for an AMD Radeon graphics card, and it just had a 3D modeled version of their, I guess, whatever they call it, their mascot or whatever for the company, and it's this scantily clad girl. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, she's like on every ad, and she's like not even a real person. She's just a computer generated, scantily clad woman to advertise a graphics card. Yeah. Like, this has, if I like your graphics card, I'm going to buy it because of the specs. I'm not going to buy it for that. Like, that's not going to change. And I'm seriously starting to wonder. I don't even think in modern times now that's even good ROI. Like, I think that's a waste of your marketing budget. Because the thing is, when the reality is, like, PC gamers buy stuff that gets good reviews based on the specs and the hardware and how their games perform. They don't give two craps about some scantily clad CGI girl. Like, that really, I really don't believe that works.
Well, and as, you know, going back to the I'm a female gamer thing, you know, I use my Mac. I'm not a hardcore gamer or anything, but if I have been toying around with the thought of maybe building a computer, and honestly, I would kind of look at this and be like, all right, do I really want to give AMD money?
NVIDIA cards are
especially
better
when
anyway.
You have choice.
They just are.
Yeah. Well, NVIDIA's kind of guilty in other ways.
Yeah.
Too. None of them are perfect.
Yeah. Like their recent party at GDC.
GDC. And who was it? Do you remember it? I think it was at CES. There was a company there who they were like giving away lap dances for something.
Oh, yeah. Who was that?
I cannot remember, and I really should.
That sounds. Seriously?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Wow. Cannot make that stuff up.
Oh, wait, I think I found a story about it.
I thought that was NVIDIA, but that might be something else.
That would be two big infractions for NVIDIA in a pretty short period of time, but it's possible.
I don't know about lap dances, but I thought they hired dancers or something like that for their party.
That was at GDC, but there was another thing.
Okay, so it's, yeah, something different.
Yeah, another thing a few months ago at CES where, I don't know, there was some kind of, in Las Vegas, some kind of party, and yeah. I remember there was something about lap dances in relation to
bad
something, and I was just like, you know, it's inappropriate. It's just flat out inappropriate in this context. Just full stop.
Yeah, I mean,
well, because it has nothing to do with anything. It's completely unrelated.
Does NVIDIA have no? Do they have no women working?
Apparently
at
not.
I find that hard to believe.
Well, so here's the thing about being a woman in tech. we are in the minority. And it is really, really hard to speak up when you're the only one who's going to be speaking up.
Yeah.
And even right, when you right. do, frequently, you're just told that you're being too sensitive or, sure. you know, your concerns are immediately dismissed out of hand. And
you're overreacting. I have
experienced this. Right.
Yeah.
Right. I have experienced sure. this personally. Like, I have been, like, mm-hmm. verbally and
I've,
harassed.
I've witnessed that. Yeah. Yeah, I've witnessed that at other companies I've worked at. It's really
yeah,
bad.
And it's like, what happened to the person who verbally harassed me? Well, of course he got a promotion. You know, it's just, it's yeah.
And also other minorities too. Like, what about gay people? What about transgender people? You know, and sometimes it's not even like, you know, because you know I know people that don't necessarily want to be forthcoming with their right. sexuality because they're afraid of how their employer is going to handle yeah. that. Specifically, like, can you imagine how uncomfortable that might make somebody? You know, you get invited to some after work party and you just see like that they've hired these dancers mm-hmm. and they're giving lap dances. Like, I can only imagine, like, I'm not going to speak for everybody, but I imagine some people would probably not be cool with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, going back to being gay in the workplace, Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple,
yeah.
you know, a major executive mm-hmm. in Apple for many years, you know, there was speculation, and it wasn't until very recently that he said, yes, I'm gay, you know, look at what I've done, and I hope this helps other people.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was in a position of great power and didn't yeah. want that to be public knowledge.
Well, at least not at first, but yeah, there was, this is what also really pisses me off when I see these news outlets writing articles about, like, just speculation about somebody in a position of power and their sexual orientation, which is just irrelevant to their job. Like, right. What does that have to do with their ability to do their job? You're only writing about this because you want page yep. views, right? And it just, and it sickens me too, especially for, like, I can only imagine what somebody would feel on the receiving end, you know, seeing these kind of articles get published about them and they're not ready to divulge that kind of information. And they have to sit on that. Like, Tim Cook sat on that, mm-hmm. you know, for years, probably seeing people talking about this. And obviously people internally, you know, higher up around him knew, you know, that he was gay, but he clearly wasn't ready for a long time to do it. And yeah, it sucks that some people feel pressured, you know, into coming out early because it's incessant. Like, there's people who are constantly writing about you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am looking forward to the point, and I may never see it, but the point in our, you know, understanding of other people where sexuality and, mm-hmm. and gender status are like non-issues because, I mean, who cares?
Yeah,
like, yeah.
It doesn't.
This is also something I want to see in a, because I'm a huge lover of science fiction. I think it would be so cool to see, you know, a futuristic society where sexuality and gender is just like nobody bats an eye at it, mm-hmm. right? We have gay people, we have transgendered people, we have bisexual people, and that's all addressed, and that's just like a normal thing. And we don't see that. We don't see those people being represented in any kind of movie, right? That's also another area I would love to see change. Yeah.
It's interesting you say that, because I've thought about Star Trek. So I'm mm-hmm. again, I'm a science fiction nut, and so I think about mm-hmm. Star Trek and Gene Roddenberry's vision of the future, and also like kind of some of the plot points of existing series and episodes and what they did. And
sure.
I wonder if they were to reboot, if they were going to do, I don't know, the new Next Generation or something, please God, much better than that. If they would start addressing some of that in, just like that.
Yeah.
Hey, look at these.
I, I don't think they need to reboot like the next generation. That it's been done. Yeah. Like let's.
I do want to see a new series.
I think there's such a good opportunity for a new series. Yeah, yeah, definitely absolutely. A new series, new cast
Better
of characters.
Than Voyager, sorry.
Yeah, you know Star Trek. It's
hey,
funny because
Voyager
Star Trek
wasn't
has
Enterprise.
As, oh, yeah, not as bad as
okay,
Enterprise.
Well,
I liked the later seasons of Voyager.
Right. So Voyager has characters I love. Enterprise was just getting good when they canceled it. Like,
that's
I was
true.
Just getting on board, and I was
once
like,
they
yeah.
finally
go places
once
with
they
this.
Finally started getting into the plots that were like, oh, so that's how that happened, and that's how this
yeah.
stuff went on
What's
in the original
the
series.
Of,
like
the that Andorian dude.
Oh,
I can't remember the
him.
Actor's name. I love that actor is
oh, yeah.
so awesome, and he's actually. Being in other
yeah,
Star Trek
lots,
series as well. He's played multiple
stuff.
Characters.
Oh, yeah.
Such a good actor. I love that. Yeah, like the end of the third season, you know, in the fourth season when they started doing that huge ongoing arc. That started to get interesting. I'll still argue that Porthos was the best character.
I loved Porthos.
He just wants his cheese.
He does. Cheese for you. I actually like Dr. Phlox.
Yeah,
I know
he's
a lot
cool.
of people don't, but
yeah,
cool.
yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And his whole wasn't his the deal with his whole race. They were all
yes,
polyamorous.
Yep. Yes,
yep.
They all had three spouses.
Yeah,
oh,
and they all
nice.
And they were all super happy and loving
and then like awesome. His wife was interested in Captain Archer or something.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was cool because they just treated it yes. like it was no yep. big deal.
Yeah. So I think that Star Trek if they came out with a new series, I really am hope in my headcanon, it's a really wonderful thing. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think that they could explore a lot of this stuff.
I think it's only a matter of time before we have a gay captain. I know people will, like, their heads will explode. Can you imagine the internet exploding?
Well, the internet exploded from, like, minor characters in Walking Dead, so.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know how old you guys are. Alex, I think you're around my age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm in my early 30s.
Yeah, so I don't know if you remember when Voyager was announced with Captain Janeway.
Oh, yeah.
And I had people who were like... I don't know. I don't know if a woman can be a starship captain. You know, this is like
people,
the late 90s. And
well,
that was
just the start of it. Like, people were annoyed just with Captain Janeway's, well, admittedly awful hairdo in the early season.
Yeah.
One,
the boss
yeah.
was much
but
better.
if that's your argument that I don't want a woman captain with a terrible hairdo.
Her hair must be perfect.
Not a very strong argument.
And then, but I mean, Voyager, I mean, 7 of 9. You want to talk about an
oh,
awesome
God.
Character?
So good.
Seven of nine
she's
is
great.
Amazing.
Great arc, too.
Yeah.
Like,
great
initially, you thought it was going one way, like, oh, look, this sexy Borg woman in this outfit. But then, that entire thing.
They got past that. I think people eventually got
yeah,
over
like,
that,
I think
that
at,
shock.
At first, it was like that, but then I actually just rewatched all of Voyager. I saw Endgame like last week and just her development, like, and it's very subtle at first. You kind of see her start to experience emotions, starting to sort of warm up to the crew and be more familiar with things, just little bits and pieces. And then we start to get to the more serious character development episodes where the doctor teaches her how to date and...
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, there's one really hilarious... And it was hilarious because it was awkward as well, the tension. But there's one episode early on where it's just 7 of 9 and Harry Kim. And she's like, take off your clothes. And he's like, oh, what? Right. It's like, I saw the way your pupils dilated.
You wish to procreate.
I don't remember the exact dialogue. Yeah, it's just like, she was so clinical about it.
Yeah.
It's like, this is just what you do. This is how the human species perpetuates itself.
Yeah, Jerry Ryan was I mean, I appreciate her so much as an actress. I haven't seen a lot that she's been in, but to play Seven of Nine, like she did in that, you know, Michael, like you were saying, that nuance over time, she's just brilliant. It was great.
Yeah, and especially I like the when you get a little bit of backstory into her childhood as a human and where she came from and like being taken away at a really young age, and also the psychological effects that has on that person of not really being a human and then having to reintegrate.
Yeah, and I mean,
and it's just so painful for her for such an extended period of time.
Yeah, and that was a huge chunk of it too. Like, it wasn't just her learning to reclaim her humanity. It was also this resentment and anger towards her parents for putting her in that position. And that feeling of being out of control, that these things happened to her and there was nothing she could do about it. And
the perception of humanity being weak, you know, the
Plague
was
all
consuming and her parents didn't stand a chance.
Doesn't she come, it's been a while since I've seen it, but doesn't she come to terms with what happened to her?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to have to watch that series again.
It's,
cause I think that's, it's such a cool, you know, her coming to terms with it too. It's, you know, it's like you realize sometimes crap, just like bad stuff happens in life and you don't have control over every aspect of it. And there's that powerlessness that that you feel, and that's, you just have to plow through it. Yeah. Great series. I'm gonna have to watch that again. I think the first two seasons are pretty rough.
There's
a lot that's rough about Voyager. I mean, as much as I love it, there are so many bad episodes. The Next Generation too, there's so many bad episodes.
Not all sci-fi shows have this problem. There is always a little bit of growing pains, but for some reason, Star Trek always has this problem.
When it's good, it's amazing. And when it's bad, it's a planet full of African stereotypes.
And TNG started getting really good in the third season, but there were the occasional, you know, pockets of like episode, you know, just the standalone episodes that were just awful.
It was on a recent rewatch of some of the episodes in The Next Generation that I realized that watching The Next Generation when I was little really shaped my perception of who Samuel Clemens was. And that was like a really interesting revelation to have in my early 30s. Like, oh hey, like in my head, that's his voice. And pretty much just like that.
The occasional high pitched. Yeah. Have either of you seen DS9?
I've seen every episode of every Star Trek series except the animated series.
Same.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I personally think that DS9 is one of the stronger, or if not strongest, written series consistently.
I would say it's the strongest story because the whole thing is one complete arc.
Yep.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it had some of the best writing, the strongest characters, and I think and I'm pretty sure it was more diverse than the other series too, because you had like Jadzia Dax, right?
Yeah, and they kind of almost had a lesbian thing there, almost,
yeah.
But it was okay.
It's forgiving.
They were
just
the right
because of the
sex
censorship
in their previous hosts
back then,
or something.
were pretty strict back then, and well, I think there were certainly certain things that they couldn't do. I'm sure.
Yeah,
they probably.
I think a lot of that though came from the show producers, like Rick Berman in particular, was against having gay characters on Star Trek for whatever reason.
Which totally goes against Gene Roddenberry's vision, right?
Yeah, but then it's like even when things started to. He didn't do it either. Like, that's the thing. Like, they had Uhura. Yeah. They had Sulu. I mean, okay, technically there was a gay character there, but
yeah. But do you like? I don't know him enough. I only know from what I've seen on documentaries and what I've heard other people say about Gene Roddenberry, and I don't know. I just feel like if he was still alive today, I want to think that he, like, this would be the next natural progression that he would say, like, yeah, this is something we need to deal with on modern television. Like, we need to have gay characters.
Yeah.
Right? Because he was so accepting of having people of other race and color. So I just feel like I don't see why he would have had an issue with gay characters.
I don't know. You know,
but we'll never know.
Yeah, we'll never know. You know, I also think of there's an episode of Enterprise where Trip, they encounter a species that has three genders.
I remember this.
Right,
one.
And so that's one of the episodes I think of when I think, well, maybe they could start doing things with like transgender characters and stuff.
Yeah,
is because they had this episode, and I can't remember the details. It's been a couple of years since I've seen it.
They did something similar on...
That was the name of the third gender, and they acted as a conduit between the other two genders. It was the only way that they could have children. And then they just sort of kept them prisoner, sort of, the rest of the time.
Like, yeah, they were like slaves or pets or...
Yeah.
Poorly treated crappy. Pets or whatever.
Yeah, that was pretty... I mean, it was awful. I liked that episode, but it was awful in the way... Like, it really kind of, like, pulls at your heartstrings, right? It's just like, oh, I can't believe they're being treated this way. But there was one episode of TNG where Riker falls in love with a genderless person.
Well, no. Well, they were, but she was one of the ones that identified as a gender, which was bad. She identified as female. Yeah. So that made it okay.
Because, of course, Riker has to be, because he's a ladies' man. So.
Yeah. It's the beard.
The beard. And the incomprehensible chair sitting maneuver that he does that you can't unsee.
Yeah, it's so weird.
You can't unsee it. Apparently, it was because of a car accident. Like, he injured his back somehow. So he just...
Is that why he kind of walks? Like, you know what I'm talking... Like, it's hard to describe the Riker walk. Mm.
He struts.
Yeah.
Where he's... Yeah.
Yeah, that
he kind of leans forward a little bit.
Yeah, that's probably all the same thing. Because,
it's very unique.
Whenever he sits in a chair... Sorry, people. I have to explain this. Now you won't be able to unsee it. Every time he sits in a chair, he will swing his leg over the chair and then sit down.
In one smooth motion.
Yes, I mean, it's effortless.
There's really a grace to it.
It's beautiful.
Honestly, props to him. If he was able to do that without any, like, you know, without having to do another take.
Without
like, if he did that the first take. Yeah, if he did that smoothly the first take every time, I'm impressed. Because some of those chairs were pretty high.
Yeah, they did have unusual.
He's a tall guy. He's a tall guy, though. He's over 6 feet. He's got long legs.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, we've been talking for an hour and a half.
Oh, man, there's a compilation of every time he does it.
We'll put a link in the show notes.
I forgot about that.
I want to see that on replay and in slow motion.
No, you don't.
Have you seen... I can't remember the name of the YouTube account that does this, there's a famous YouTube account where the guy's taking
Gazora
and like he puts them together and they you know what I'm talking about? And they're like really hilarious.
With Data painting the
Data painting the picture and then like ends up getting thrown into space and it explodes.
And then it just immediately drop cuts to the credits. It's just like bizarre thing and then da 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 da. Yeah, those are the Gazora fan edits.
I was gonna say it's not unlike the movies, so like bizarre thing happens and then it ends.
You can find those here.
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah, those are pretty bad. My favorite one is the one where Picard keeps practicing the little flute that he got.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one.
That's my favorite episode.
Yeah, so the edit is he keeps playing the flute, and they're, like, trying to message him, like, ah, Captain, the ship is exploding, and he just keeps playing the flute, and then the ship blows up as he's playing the
priceless.
Flute.
There's just too many to describe there, especially the one with Q being naked.
Yeah, and he's
the
just they keep rolling the clip of him lying there looking at them creepily over and over again. He's just like and his tongue like goes out and it's just like what? And then it cuts to them reacting.
Cuts to the holodeck too, and he's naked on the holodeck. Like Data pulls the cord or whatever next to the lamp, and then suddenly Q shows up naked.
Yes, geez.
Oh god.
He's brazen for sure.
And sometimes he's Discord.
Oh, that's my
true.
Favorite part of My Little Pony ever.
I know. Like he's basically yeah. Q on the show.
Yeah, he is.
He's basically
yeah.
Q.
Yeah. Did you see the Brony documentary that he...
No, I haven't seen
it
yet.
Not.
It's on Netflix. It's quite good, actually. I think he did a Kickstarter or some kind of... It was like fan-funded, too. He really wanted to make this documentary about the whole Brony culture. Just he's totally embraced it, which is fascinating. But on that note, Aline, where can we find you?
A couple of places. So I have my own podcast. It's called Less Than or Equal, and I interview people who are in marginalized spaces or who are marginalized in geeky spaces, more about the cool things that they're doing more than, you know, oh my gosh, tech sucks and here's why. So you can find that at lessthanorequal.com. And I also have a Twitter account that's at lessthanorequal. My personal Twitter account is at Aline, which is A-L-E-E-N. And I'm also on this cool new podcast about Jim and the Holograms. And Alex, I don't know the information for that, so you're going to have to give it to me.
Pitch your show, Alex.
Sure. It's gemcast.tv and Gemcast on Stitcher and now on iTunes. And also at gempodcast on Twitter. Couldn't get the somebody took the Gemcast.
Of course they
Twitter
did.
Handle and has not posted a single tweet and has been sitting.
Let me guess, it's
like
an egg. It's not an egg.
No, it's not actually. It's got a picture of a lady. It's got a picture of a lady on it, and I tweeted at the account and I said, hey, do you want to give up the account? And no reply.
Ugh. Darn. One day.
Yeah, I was really hoping that even if they didn't check Twitter, you know, Twitter by default when you set up a new account sends email notifications. So I figured, but since I got no response, I can only assume the email is no longer working. Yeah. Otherwise, I would imagine they would have replied. But yes, if you love Jem and the Holograms, please join us. Episode 1 will be going up shortly.
Awesome.
Yay.
I look forward to hearing it.
Great. Well, and thank you very much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I had fun.
Yeah, this was great.
Great.
All right, everyone. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The Impromptu. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to leave a rating on iTunes and let your friends know about us. Detailed show notes for each episode are available on our website at theimpromptu.net. You can follow the show on Twitter at theimpromptu, as well as our hosts individually at Zen Impulse for Michael Norton and at Zero Distraction for Alex Knight. As we are entirely listener-supported, you can donate to us at theimpromptu.net/donate. All proceeds go towards covering bandwidth as well as equipment upgrades to uphold the highest level of audio quality you've come to expect. We really do appreciate your support, and we look forward to seeing you next time.